Good morning. You guys doing okay today? It's a beautiful day out there, starting to warm up a little bit. Some of the snow and ice going away. So glad you are here today. Hey, I want to say hi to, of course, everybody here in the auditorium. And I want to say hi to all of you who are joining us online today. We're glad you're here. I am Jeff Surratt. I'm one of the teaching pastors here at Front Range. As Pastor Ernest said a while ago, if you're new here or you're just getting connected, we want you to know everything we do is built around three things. We want to help you build community. We want you to help discover purpose. We want you to help you grow in your faith in Jesus. Speaking of Pastor Ernest, he really doesn't want me to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. Today is Ernest's birthday. Yeah. And I tell you what's amazing is first thing this morning when we got here to set everything up, Ernest was right there with us pushing cases, setting things up. And for a man of his age, I tell you what, that is something else. Now, happy birthday, Ernest. So we are going to continue today our series called Do-Over. And I don't know about you, but I can really relate to sometimes needing a do-over. And Pastor Johnny last week, he brought, if you missed the message, he did a great job. I encourage you to go watch it online, but he brought a game system, a valuable game system from his youth, an NES, the original Nintendo, and showed us how the reset button worked. And I thought this weekend, I didn't want to be, topped by Johnny, so I brought a valuable, it's actually a game console from my youth. When I was a kid, this was a game console that we used. Maybe you have seen this before. It's called an Etch-A-Sketch. Yeah. It's really cool because the controllers are built in. And that one goes left to right, that one goes up and down, but here's the tricky part. You turn them both, you get diagonal. Pretty impressive, isn't it? What's the best part about an Etch-A-Sketch? You shake it, and you get to start over, right? Wouldn't that be great in life if you could just kind of shake life once in a while and get a start and get a do-over? I could have used it this morning. I got up early. We have to be here at 6 a.m. to kind of set all this up. So I got up, and I live in Parker, so it's pretty early, getting ready to leave my house. And I did something getting into my truck. I have no idea what I did. It never has happened before, but I set off the burglar alarm, okay? At 5:30 in the morning, that's not a popular thing to be doing in our house or in our neighborhood. To make it worse, though, I couldn't figure out how to turn it off. I pushed the little button. It kept going. I thought, well, maybe it's not my car. Maybe it's another car, my wife's car. So I pushed the button for hers. So now we had two burglar alarms going. That makes it even better. So I got hers shut off, and I didn't know what to do. So I thought, well, let me get it outside so the neighbors can hear it better. So I back out of the garage, and I think, oh, that's a terrible idea. So now all of Parker, and if you're from Parker, I apologize. Good morning. And so finally I'm pushing buttons. Finally I push a button. It turns off just in time to see my wife peek her head out the door of the garage with the look of what is wrong with you, right? Man, I could have used a do-over this morning. Could I just shake a little bit, go back, get out of bed, get my shower, go from there? You ever had a day like that? Like, I just wish I could shake it and do over. Or maybe a week or... And we're barely, not quite 2 weeks into 2021. In some ways, it already feels like we need to shake 2021 and get a do-over. Well, that's why we're doing this series, is how do we have a do-over? And we're studying a guy that I really relate to in the Bible, a guy named Peter. And what I love about Peter is over and over and over again, this is a guy who needs to have a do-over. In fact, we're kind of going through his life and looking at different times that he needed a reset. He needed a do-over. Today we're going to look at one of the most famous do-overs in Peter's life, one of the most famous do-overs of all time. It's in Matthew chapter 14. Now, if you brought a Bible or a device, I'd love for you to get it out, turn to Matthew 14. If you don't have the Bible app on your device, you can download it right now. We love that app. I use it all the time. But don't worry, we'll also have the verses up on the screen. So let me set a little context as we get into this. Jesus has been ministering, he's been teaching. And he gets news that one of the closest people to him on earth, his first cousin, John the Baptist, has just been executed by Herod. That is a huge blow to Jesus. And he just is like steps back a little bit. He wants to get away with his disciples and process and mourn and grieve. But people find out where he is, and hundreds and then thousands of people follow him, and he teaches the people that are there. And then it gets to be toward the end of the day, and he realizes that they don't have any food to eat. And he says to the disciples, do we have anything to feed them? And they said, oh, we got a couple of fish and some bread. So Jesus has them sit down in groups, and he feeds 5,000 people with the two fish and the five loaves. And it's an exhausting day, and he's still trying to deal with losing John the Baptist. And so he says to his disciples, he says, guys, I got to have some time alone. If you guys get in the boat, go back across the Sea of Galilee, huge lake. Go across the sea and don't worry about it. I'll catch you. I'll find you later. I'll catch up later. And so they do. They take off across the water, and he goes up into the hills. And I just imagine he sat down and just had a big sigh and thinking about John the Baptist, thinking about all these people, thinking about the mission ahead of him. And he just begins to pray. And as he prays, it gets later and later. And when he's done praying, it's night. In fact, it's the middle of the night. And so that's where we pick up the story. We pick up the story with the disciples in verse 24 of Matthew chapter 14. And it says, Meanwhile, while Jesus has been praying, the disciples were in trouble far away from land, for a strong wind had risen, and they were fighting heavy waves. Now, these guys are used to the water. Many of them are fishermen. In fact, we know that some of them, their fathers were fishermen. Probably their grandfathers were fishermen. They have fished on this sea, on this lake, all of their lives. So for them to be in trouble, this was a bad storm. And as you study the Sea of Galilee, you learn that big storms roll in over the mountains and hit suddenly. And the lake is so wide and so deep that waves can be up to 6 feet high. And if you've ever seen one of those little fishing boats that these 12 guys were in, that is terrifying. I can relate a little bit. A few years ago, I took my family on vacation in the mountains of Tennessee, and up there, there's a beautiful little mountain lake, and it's really a dammed up river, and so it's not incredibly wide, but it's very, very deep. And I was out with the family. We saw this storm rolling across the lake. We tried to get back to the dock, but the wind was so strong that the little motor we had wouldn't push against the wind. And we're stuck in the middle of the lake. Rain starts pouring down. Lightning is literally hitting the lake all around us. Waves are washing over the top of the pontoon boat. I looked at the depth finder. We were in 150 feet of water right then. It was terrifying. Now, the disciples had it even worse, because when this happened to them, it's the middle of the night. In fact, we find out in the very next verse that it's about 3 o'clock in the morning, and Jesus comes toward them walking on the water. And when the disciples see him walking on the water, they were terrified. In their fear, they cried out, "It's a ghost." I can relate. Like, in the middle of that storm I just described, if some dude came walking up on the water, I think I would have wet myself a little bit. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's scary. Like, the explanation of "it's a ghost," that's the best I could come up with, some guy walking up on the water. But this next moment is just so significant. It says, "But Jesus spoke to them at once, and he said, 'Don't be afraid. Take courage. I am here.'" He chooses his words very carefully. He says, "Take courage, I am here." We know by that phrase, this is one of the major God moments in the Bible. One of those times when God chose to reveal himself to humans. This is like when Moses in the Old Testament is out tending sheep in the middle of the desert, and he looks over, there's a bush on fire, and he goes over to the bush, and a voice talks to him from the bush, and Moses realizes God is here. It's the Old Testament prophet Elijah when he's running from Queen Jezebel, and he's in a cave and he's hiding in a cave, and he feels called out to the mouth of the cave, and there he hears in what the Bible describes as a still, small voice, the voice of God saying, "I am here." It's the Apostle Paul in the New Testament as he's on the road to Damascus before he becomes an apostle, and he's persecuting Christians, and all of a sudden a light shines from heaven and he falls on the ground and he's blinded and he hears a voice from heaven, and the voice is God. And in a way, it's God saying, "Paul, I'm here." And Jesus walks out on the water and reveals himself again to his disciples that he is God, and he says, "I am here." And look how Peter responds. He's in the boat, and Peter calls to him, and he says, "Lord, if it's really you, tell me to come to you walking on the water." "Yes, come," Jesus said. So Peter went over the side of the boat and walked on water toward him. That's easy to skip through and not think much about that, but let's pause right there. That's a pretty significant moment because, you know, when I was a kid growing up, we used to tell this story about Peter walking on the water and Jesus walking on the water. What I didn't think about or realize, this storm is still going on. The wind is still blowing. Up to 6 foot waves are still breaking into the boat and over the boat. And so Peter has to wait for between waves, and then add between waves, he gets over the edge of the boat, stands up, and begins to walk on water. He becomes the only non-Messiah in the history of the world to walk on water. This is incredible. But the reason we relate to Peter is because he immediately messes it up. Like, he does the most amazing thing of all time, and then he screws it up. The next verse says, "But when he saw the strong wind and the waves, he was terrified and began to sink. 'Save me, Lord,' he shouted." See, Peter's made a huge mistake. I mean, he made a leap of faith. He got out of the boat, which was great, but then he took his eyes off of Jesus. And as soon as he took his eyes off of Jesus, he was in deep, deep trouble. His life was at stake. I don't know if you've ever had an experience like that. I have, where I've taken a big leap of faith. I've made a step. I've said something out loud. I've boldly proclaimed faith in some way or words or action. And then I've taken my eyes off Jesus and began to look at the circumstances and then realize, oh no, what have I done? And that's where Peter is at. But then the next verse says that Jesus immediately reached out and grabbed him. And I love this part because what Jesus says next seems very harsh, but it's not. Jesus says it to Peter. It's before they got back in the boat. The wind is howling. The disciples can't hear. Jesus wants Peter to learn in this moment. And he says, "You have so little faith. Why did you doubt me?" And then when they climbed back into the boat, the wind stopped and the disciples worshiped him. And they said, "You really are the Son of God," they exclaimed. As you hear that story, who do you relate to? Who do you want to be in that story? We don't get to be Jesus. There's one of those. But do you want to be one of the 11 that stay in the boat that are terrified and see someone walk on water? Or do you want to be the guy who climbs out of the boat and actually walks on water? I want to be Peter. I want to walk on water. That sounds like a lot of fun. I want to be a water walker. And I want to talk about what does it mean to be a water walker. And some of the concepts that I want to share in the rest of the message are based on a book that I read 20 years ago. And some of you may have read it back then. It's called If You Want to Walk on Water, You've Got to Get Out of the Boat. And this book, honestly, in my life was transformational, especially in my faith. It's a great book. You can pick it up on Amazon if you want to. But what do we know about water walkers? First thing we know is water walkers recognize God's voice. See, Peter doesn't just hop out of the boat as soon as he sees this ghost figure walking up and start water skiing. Water skiing in a hurricane isn't faith. It's insanity. Peter first wants to identify, is this Jesus? He says, "If it's you, tell me to come." See, this isn't a story about risk-taking. This is a story about obedience. Peter doesn't get out of the boat until Jesus says, "Yes, come to me on the water." We have to learn to discern between faith and foolishness. See, I've had friends in the past who've heard a message like this or read a passage like this and thought, "Oh, I'm going to make a bold move. I'm going to get out of the boat. I'm going to do something crazy." And I know people who have literally quit their jobs, sold everything they had, moved to another country, moved to another continent. And then when they got there, they've realized, I wasn't hearing God. I was just jumping out of a boat. That's not faith. That's foolishness. We have to learn, is it God calling me? What is he calling me to? See, this is not a story about extreme sports. It's a story about extreme discipleship. It's going wherever you have to go in order to follow Jesus. So water walkers know the voice of God. Water walkers also get out of the boat. Like, that's the most obvious thing. If you want to walk on water, as the book says, you have to get out of the boat. There were 12 guys in the boat. There were 12 guys who saw this figure walking up. There were 12 guys who heard Jesus' voice, but only one guy climbed out of the boat. To get out of the boat, we have to get to the point where we're no longer satisfied with the comfortable faith that we have, where we can't just continue to pray those prayers for safety and for comfort, where we get what someone described as a holy discontent. I have to have more. There has to be more to life than this. Following Christ has to be more than just showing up at church and reading a few verses and praying a few things. There has to be an adventure in this. We have to get out of the boat. To figure that out, we have to figure out, what is your boat? I mean, what is the thing that is holding you back from an extreme discipleship, from an adventure in faith? Whatever represents safety and comfort in your life, apart from God himself, that's your boat. Your boat is not your spouse. Your boat is not your family. Your boat is not your church. Your boat might not even be your job. God is not going to call you away from the very things he's given to you to steward and to protect. Your boat is what's holding you back from a close, daily, adventuresome, sometimes scary walk with Christ. For the disciples, their boat was a literal boat, and they stayed in there because they were afraid of getting out of the water. for your boat, whatever is holding you back. It might be, you know what, if I got out, if I made a bold statement, if I told other people I'm taking this challenge, I'm moving toward Jesus in an extreme way, what would they say about me? You know, I tried it before and I looked like an idiot. I can't do that again. I don't want to look like a fool. I don't know. I think I'll just stay back here. That's what holds us back. That's the boat that we can't step out of. But if we want to experience the adventure of following Christ, beyond the comfortable faith, beyond, hey, just sneak me into heaven if you can, but living this life of extreme discipleship, we have to be willing to step out of the boat. What is it for you? I remember there's a great story in the Gospels. Jesus is teaching. And a young man with a lot of means walks up and he says, Jesus, let me ask you a question. How do you inherit eternal life? What he was really seeking is how do you find the meaning of life? How do you find what the world is all about? What are we here for? And Jesus asks him a couple of questions and he answers. And then Jesus discerns that this guy is having trouble getting out of his boat. And so Jesus says, well, I'll tell you what you need to do. You need to go and sell everything you have, give what you get to the poor, and then come and follow me. And it's very poignant because the Bible says that the young man went away sad because he had much. Jesus discerned that the boat for this young man was his riches, was his wealth. And Jesus isn't calling all of us to sell everything he has. He's calling all of us to step out of our boat. I've wondered about that young man when he was old and life was getting shorter, death was ahead of him. I wonder if as he looked at his stock portfolio, as he looked at the mansion that he lived in, as he looked at his transportation and his servants around him, I wonder if he thought to himself, what about that day when the carpenter's son said to me, would you like to take a wild bet on the kingdom of God? And I said, no. I wonder how life would have turned out. I wonder what it would be like to come to the end of our lives and to look back and realize that we never said no to more so that we could experience less with other people, where we never experienced true sacrifice in our lives, where we held on to what we had instead of helping those who did not have. What would it be like to come to the end of life and realize that we had never boldly shared our faith? To come to the end of life and realize that dream that God put in our heart years ago, we never pursued it. We never stepped out of the boat. We never figured out what would it be like to live on the edge in extreme discipleship. Imagine facing the end of life having never stepped out of the boat. How scary would that be? So Peter had to get out of the boat. The next thing is that happens to water walkers, the water walkers have to confront their fear. They have to confront their fear. See, there were 12 guys in the boat, and all 12 of them were terrified. The difference was, is one of them confronted his fear and stepped out of the boat. I'm going to be honest, this may cost me my man card for the 107th time in my life, but I struggle with facing fear. In fact, in our marriage with Sherry and I, she's the more adventuresome one. I'm a little more cautious. Now, a couple of years ago, we had the chance to go to Hawaii for our anniversary, and on the plane over, I made a commitment to myself. I didn't tell her. I said, you know what? No matter what adventure she wants to go on, I'm just going to say yes. No matter what fear that might rise, I'm going to say yes. So we get there. One of the first things she says is, hey, tomorrow we ought to take our rental car, and we ought to drive the road to Hana. Now, I was going to say yes, but I wanted to Google first to know what I'm saying yes to, and found that there's a couple of websites that called the Road to Hana one of the 5 most dangerous roads in the world. Woohoo! Let's do that. So the next day we got up and we took off on the Road to Hana. And while we're driving all the hairpin curves and sheer cliffs and all that, we see this waterfall beside the road. And Sherry says, oh, I want to get out. I want to see that waterfall. I said, sure. So I pulled over. I let her out. Then I had to pull on around a little bit to find a place to park the car. And as I pull around, I see some people climbing over the guardrail, and there was this, it wasn't like a trail, it was like insanity, like going down the side of this hill, down to this waterfall, and I thought, oh no, Sherry's going to want to do that. And I go and park the car, and by the time I walk back, she is standing at the guardrail. I'm like, oh, and she says, hey, we ought to hike down here to the waterfall, and inside, the voice in my head was going, no! And it heard my mouth say, sure, that sounds great. And so I climb over the guardrail. It's literally a 5-foot sheer drop straight down to the next step. I have no idea. Figure out how to scramble down. We scramble through vines and rocks and everything else. And we get down to the bottom and we get to this waterfall. And I think we have a picture of what we experience. It's one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. There was maybe one or two other people there at the same time we were, and it was just gorgeous. But to get to the beauty of the waterfall, I had to face the fear before. To get to the beauty of following Jesus so close that we can hear his voice, we have to face our fear. So water walkers confront their fear. Water walkers also learn from their failure. They learn from their failure. It's hard to say Peter failed, right? I mean, of all the people who have ever been born on earth, two of them have walked on water. One was God, one was Peter. It's hard to call him a failure for that, but I think if you talk to Peter, Peter would say, I failed, man. I failed. When I got scared, when I sank in the water, I felt like a complete failure. But he needed a do-over, and he got back up. There was a phrase that went around a couple years ago. It was one of these motivational posters. Did you guys see this where it said, fear is never an, our failure is never an option. That's stupid. That's the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Failure, water walkers know failure is always an option. The way we learn in life is we fail. We all fail. In fact, some of us, we may feel like failures right now. I mean, over the last year, maybe as a parent, you feel like a failure. Like we all feel that sometimes as a parent, as not knowing what to do or maybe losing our temper or that kind of stuff. But over the last year, we've had to try to be a homeschool teacher and all these other kind of things, and it feels like maybe we were a failure. Maybe you feel like a failure as a spouse, or maybe as an employee, you've lost a job along the way and you feel like a failure. Maybe as a business owner, your business maybe have failed or is barely alive and you feel like you're a failure. And I don't want to downplay that feeling. It's a terrible feeling. It's one of my biggest fears. However, welcome to the club. We're just one big club of failures here at Front Range. We've all failed. The difference is water walkers fail, and they get a do-over, and they get up, and they move again. And that's what Peter did. He failed, but he didn't let it define him. The worst failure is not to sink in the waves. The worst failure is to never get out of the boat. So water walkers learn from their failure. Water walkers keep their eye on the prize. They keep their eye on the prize. Here's the interesting thing is when Peter took his eyes off Jesus, he began to sink. He was looking at his circumstances. He was listening to his fear. He remembered, oh my gosh, I don't know how to walk on water. But when he realized that his only hope was Jesus, that's when he was saved. And here's where we can miss the point of this story. It's a super familiar story if you've been around church. And we can think that the point of the story is walking on water, but it's not. If it was, if water walking was a sign of extreme discipleship, then eventually all 12 disciples would have walked on water. If it was a major part of discipleship, we'd have water walking classes over at Chatfield Reservoir. In fact, we go over there this afternoon. It's easier to start on ice. You know what I'm saying? We'll walk on ice, then we'll walk on water. But it's not. The point of the story was not to walk on water. The point of the story was to walk where Jesus walked. Peter wanted to walk with Jesus. And Jesus walks in some pretty crazy places. And he walks with some really unlikely people. You see, Jesus walks in homeless shelters and in food kitchens. Jesus walks in prisons and halfway houses. Jesus walks into school lunchrooms and office conference rooms. Jesus walks in your neighbor's living room and in their backyard. Jesus invites you to walk with him. I remember Sherry came back from her first missions trip. It was years ago. And she had gone to a school for AIDS orphans in a tiny village called Inabita, Kenya. It's Christ's Gift Academy. And when she went, the school was in terrible shape. They lived in awful, awful poverty, and they didn't know how they were going to pay for food for the kids the next week. In fact, the missions team pulled together what cash they had to buy the kids food the next week. And Sherry came home and she said, we have got to do something. We have got to do something. I said, I agree. Let's write a check. And she said, oh, we're going to write a check, but we're going to do more. I said, yeah, how about just write a check? That sounds really good to me. Sherry said, no, I think God's calling us to do more. And so over the next few months and years, we were able to put together a U.S. board to help give them some stability. We were able to get all of the kids in the school sponsored. We were able to build infrastructure where they could know that they have a future. And a few months after Sherry came back and said, we've got to do something, I found myself sitting on a dirt floor in a tribal chief's hut in Mbita, Kenya, eating fly-infested cheese sandwiches and talking about faith. I'm going to be super transparent. That was the last place I wanted to be. That's not my idea of a good time. But that day, that's where Jesus was walking. And so that's where I walked. Where's Jesus calling you to walk today? Where is he walking? And he's saying, come on along. This is going to be crazy. You're going to have to get out of the boat. There's going to be wind and waves, and you're going to fail and fear, but it's going to be the ride of your life. Some of you hear that today, and you say, hey, Jeff, I'm not saying I'm the best disciple that ever was, but man, I'm walking as close to Jesus as I can. I mean, I'm reaching out. I'm over the line. I'm doing it, and I know that. Because I know the people at Front Range, and there are people here that serve and give and sacrifice and follow Jesus into crazy places, and it's amazing. And some hear that today and say, you know, that's great. You know, I'm glad that you get fired up about that. I'm good where I am. I'm good with the faith the way it is. I'm okay with a little bit of scripture, a little bit of prayer, a little bit of church. I'm good. And there's some that say, I got to get out of the boat, man. I can't do this anymore. I know there's more to life. I know there's more to discipleship. I just can't hang back. For some of you, you've never been out. I mean, you've never been on an adventure with Jesus, or it's been years since you have. And today's a day when you can just say, I'm going to follow Jesus for the very first time. For others of us, we're going to say, you know what? I don't know. I don't know what it is. I don't have a concrete plan. But all I know is I can't sit here in the boat anymore, so I'm going to take a step. And I'm going to take whatever step that is and follow Jesus step by step and into whatever this extreme discipleship looks like. I'm going to pray for you guys. Would you guys close your eyes? Those of you watching online, it'd be cool if you close your eyes too. First of all, I wonder if there's anybody here today that would say, you know what, I haven't been following Jesus. Maybe you've never followed him. Or maybe it's been years since you would say, I actually, day by day, was following Jesus. And today, I want to take that step. I want to get out of the boat. I want to follow Jesus. Would you just either raise your hands or just you can type something into the chat online. But you just raise your hand right now and say, pray for me. I want to follow Jesus today. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks. If that's you today, I'm going to pray a prayer for you. Sometime in the next few minutes, there's going to be a phone number on the screen, and you can just text the word follow to that number, and we'll follow up with you. But could I pray with you? Father, I just thank you today that you don't reject me, that you don't make fun of me, that you love me, and that you are pursuing me. And Lord, today I'm sorry for my past. I'm sorry that I have followed my own path. I've made my own choices. Please forgive me for that. Today, I want to follow you. And so, Lord, I get out of the boat. I place my trust in you. And Lord, I ask it today in Jesus' name. Amen.